This episode of the West Side Discussion is sponsored by Birdie Fuel Coffee and Mando Discware. Use code WSD10 to save 10%. Welcome back to the West Side Discussion podcast. My name is Jay. This is episode 10. Thank you so much for listening. This episode is the first season finale. I do have a few more episodes lined up for the end of the year, but I will return more regularly in 2022. To end the first season, I invited a few of the ladies from Team Westside to have a discussion about women in disc golf. This episode will be moderated by Carrie Neal. Carrie is finishing her second year on Team Westside and has been playing disc golf for over 20 years. During that time, she has been very active in the disc golf community, focusing most of her efforts on women's leagues and events and doing what she can to grow the sport for women. This year, she used her proceeds from her fundraiser discs not for herself, but to support women locally to her in Canada. The money from her discs helped make women's leagues free to play and went towards the prize packs. She also sent a parcel to Saskatchewan for a few women out there that are trying to grow the sport. Because of all of her hard work and dedication to women in disc golf, I thought Carrie would be the perfect person to lead this discussion. She will be joined by fellow Team Westside members Erica Stinchcomb, Madison Tomeno, and Nora Bellotti. I'll let Carrie take it from here.
Erica, Madison, Nora, excited to be here with you guys tonight. I'm going to start off with asking you to share some experiences as a woman playing disc golf, whether it be locally or touring. And let's start with Erica.
Great. Yes. Hi. Hello, everyone. Thanks for having me on the podcast. So when I started, I didn't see another woman play even like casually. I hesitate to say seriously, but casually, like on their own accord for the first 6 years that I played. Like I only played with men. If I saw another woman play, it was like, you know, it seemed like she was a girlfriend or a wife or just kind of along for the ride, but wasn't really there with the intention of playing a full round of disc golf. So I felt like an oddity. And, you know, it took until my first tournament that I played after college until I saw other women play at all. And there was 6 women in the advanced division that I played in, and there was probably like 20 women at the tournament. And it just blew my mind that like, wow, other women do play. Like, this is a real sport. People even compete. Like, I got so psyched. And it's been cool to see it grow from there.
Madison, what were your experiences like?
Yeah, I would say locally, you know, we're really growing a lot. I'm from Portland, Oregon, and we are getting more and more women playing. But I would say the majority of local tournaments that I play, it's still, I only have 1 or 2 competitors. And that it's a different game than men when you only have a small division that you play with, you know, all the time. And then it's really great to get out and play some of the larger events and have that big field.
And Nora, do you have any experiences locally as compared to being out on tour?
Well, I've never been on tour, but very similar to like what Erica said, you know, I played with all the boys, and it wasn't until my first tournament in 2018, I actually met Janet Hershey, who's Gavin Rathbun's mom. And she's like, who are you? I don't know who you are. You have to play this women's tournament next weekend. And it was the very second tournament I ever played in. And it was Wisco Disco, hosted by Jenny Sanfilippo of Ladies First. And my mind was blown. I walked into, you know, a park that had 60 women at it. And then since then, it's way more than that. But that was pretty much where I was hooked. Once I saw how, like, so many other women playing, it really, you know, like put that fire underneath me to like, oh, we can all do this. So definitely an awesome experience.
Love it. What do you guys, all three of you, like for improvements over those years? Let's go back to like the locally. Obviously, you've met a bunch of people and seen a bunch of women out touring or been to tournaments. But locally, have you seen clubs make strides or steps towards improving that and more women being involved? Or do you think there's still work to be done?
Always more work to do, for sure. It is interesting, you know, I've played more locally and like as an, you know, amateur or like really low level non-traveling pro than I have as a touring pro. So it's different. But I would say there are some communities, like Portland is one of the bigger ones, actually. And Madison and I even playing together as And am, and I used to go down there when I lived in Seattle because there was a little bit bigger of a women's field, and like they have the Chick Flick there, and women all women's tournaments definitely are like a great way to get people get women playing the sport, like Daisy Chains or the Chick Flick or I don't know, is the Wisco Disco, was that an all women's or whatever? But there are several of those, like La Nina Open, that really get women excited and playing, and sometimes it can be intimidating to play with other men. So that's like a great way to get more women playing, is just to maybe have like women friendly like leagues or like all women's rounds, all women's tournaments, things like that. And then on the professional level, the involvement of, or just, I don't want to say recruiting more women, but more women are now playing. I think the Pro Tour is maybe the biggest reason for that, and why our field is growing in FPO anyway. Just doing things like equal payout at the Pro Tour, and curating the tee pads and the tournaments to make it a little bit more interesting, so we're not playing all the same tees as the men, and to like really highlight our skills, which are different from the men. So I do think things are improving, and improving like pretty quickly, but still really a long way to go. The disparity is massive in our sport, and generally in women's and men's sports anyway.
Absolutely. Madison, having Portland, I've been down there a couple times. Well, Worlds was my big one. And I noticed tons of women down there. And is that because of tournament, or is it because of local, or a mix of both? What's like, is there more you guys could be doing, or do you think it's pretty good?
Well, I mean, there's always more. And I think we have also a really supportive men's community. But try as you might, getting women to like go to a predominantly male league or something like that, I just haven't seen happen. So we got, well, I don't know. We decided last year to just start our own women's league. And that has just flourished, and started like a Facebook page on social media just for Portland women. And now I think we have like over 100 members, and it's just turned into this space of like meetups, and we do like a casual league and hook up with like the other women's leagues in the area. And just really creating a space that's easy to find, that's not just, one of the normal ones, 'cause like while I feel comfortable going to those, I know a lot of newer players don't. So it's been growing a lot, especially since the pandemic. I think we have a lot more new players, people that are trying it. We're getting so many Ultimate players have just come over, and they're fantastic. And they're filling our leagues. It's fantastic. So yeah, that's been good over here.
Amazing. And Nora, how about you?
I think just with the, with my experience playing in the women's tournaments, women's only tournaments, not just the Wisco Disco off the bat that really got me hooked, but Feather Frenzy and Dellwood and the Birdie Babes out there, all the dolls leagues, those do so many things like what you ladies are talking about. My community is very small, and we're just trying to get players of all shapes and sizes and genders and whatnot to play. And we recently started discussing just, we've hosted the Trilogy Challenge, we've done Veterans for Vets, we've done the match plays, and we've noticed so many new players coming out. Like, those are a lot of people's first tournaments. So I would love to maybe like and get your guys back up and feedback in this too. But Dynamic Disc does such a great job with these kind of quote unquote like tournament in a box style formats that I don't see why, we couldn't develop some sort of tournament in a box per se women's, that's specifically targeted with, those lighter weight discs. Those, I'm not saying everything needs to be rolled in glitter and pink. I know how much we all like kind of, I don't know about you guys, but that kind of irks me a lot when people are like, oh, you're a girl, here's a pink disc. Like, okay, thanks. But you know what I mean? Kind of having that, what are we looking for? Because I'm amateur. I play FA1. A lot of my payout is funny money, and normally I can't find anything that I want to throw in the what those vendors are offering. So, like you guys said, there's so much improvements we could be made, but there's also like really simple strides that those people that have, the ability to really work with us, sometimes it just takes an idea and a little bit of effort, but definitely we have
I love it.
a lot of room to
It's a
grow.
super cool idea.
Yeah, I
It
think
is.
that
That's amazing. And I kind of rolls into the next question I wanted to ask you, ladies, was, is there something TDs could be doing more to attract you to come to these tournaments, or something that's impressed you that you want to give a shout out to that you think should happen at more tournaments, and obviously women specific tournaments, but just going to a tournament, say, you know, I don't know, Beaver State Fling or something like that, where you've gone as a woman, have you felt included, or have you just kind of felt like, you know, here's a extra large unisex t-shirt. Like, you know, is there other things that could be done? Or like you said, here's a pink disc, you're gonna like it. Right. What's impressing you and what can be done more?
Bathrooms.
I always want to go first.
Love it. Bathrooms, definitely.
Or if there's not gonna be bathrooms, to publicize it beforehand. We run a tremendous amount of tournaments, and we try and be really mindful of including women. I think something that other TDs can do is allow women to compete in divisions with less than three players. You can offer all of the divisions that you think would be appropriate for the course. And then, yeah, having a stock of like not only lighter weight, but less stable, stuff like that. And then be prepared to answer questions about what they do. Those are my big ones.
I love it. And Erica, how about you?
Yeah, I've seen some really great things. Like, you know, there's sometimes like a PDGA women's hospitality tent, or just like making sure, again, the bathrooms are stocked with appropriate things for feminine needs, and making sure like bathrooms are spaced well at women's tournaments. Like, that matters for everybody, but especially for us, like, we don't have great options out there on the course. If you're having a bit of an emergency, it's like a really weirdly not thought about thing, I think. So when that's done well, it is impressive. And those are like really small things, but they add up. And then again, the women's tournaments, like I said, I've played La Nina and Picklick and Daisy Chains and things like that, and they go all out for the women, and that is like the coolest thing ever. Or like US women's, I think this year, I think they got everybody a caddy for FPO or something. You know, there's like little things, but ultimately I do think, like, as you're moving up in professionalism, that you just have to make the money equal. Like, I don't want it all to come down to like just money, but like, you're not gonna be able to attract people at a higher level if it's like, oh, you could do this full time and make like a few hundred dollars if you get 12th out of 40 people. Like, that's not enough. So like, one that impressed me this year was the Carolina Clash Kyle Deck. It's just an A tier, but he runs another round disc golf and made sure it was like equal payout. And that to me was like, it speaks volumes, like to prioritize women. You know, like, it's great, all the small stuff, it adds up, but to like put it truly first, you don't see that super often. And yeah, we need more of that. That's how we're going to grow it on a large scale, on a professional level anyway.
I love it. I'd had this this conversation with someone as well. They're running an A tier and they only had like three divisions offered for women. And I said, where's all the AM divisions? And they said, well, you know, if women request it, we'll add them. And I said, don't make us an afterthought.
Exactly.
You know, put them in now and take them away if no one registers. But women aren't going to ask for it if it's not there. So I love that comment that you made, Madison, like, offer as many divisions as you can and make them feel welcome immediately, not after the fact, or making them fight for a division to play in. And that's been a big one for me as well. When I TD a tournament, I make sure that all the divisions are there and that women have every opportunity to play whichever division they feel comfortable in.
I've seen the same thing where there's, you know, 20 open spots in a men's novice or rec division, and you know, the four spots for the women's is already full. You know, it's like, then, and I've gotten that response too. Well, if somebody goes on, you know, somebody gets on the wait list, or, you know, if we get four girls on a wait list, then we'll open up. Like, no, well, do you think you're gonna get 20 guys on a wait list? Plus, you know, like, if you open it up and then I can tell some girls to go on and try to sign up. Ow, Katie. Sorry, but yeah, like, just having it there for them, just to see we're open, like, you shouldn't have to bang down the door, you know?
Right. It goes back to the inclusiveness and making them feel welcome, and you can do all the leagues and all the doubles and everything, but as soon as you run a tournament and you don't offer a division they feel comfortable playing in, you've lost them. At least I think so. And it's a good segue to this question here. Do you think the movement hashtag respect her game has made a difference in any of this?
I think online it has. I mean, just in my experience, like I said, I kind of in a smaller community, but I've never really fortunately, I've always played with a lot of guys, and the most, you know, 99.9% of them have always been very respectful of me, at least to my face. But, you know, I definitely noticed this change online. You know, you see highlights of any of the FPO players, and you're probably going to see a few stragglers down there commenting on something that doesn't have anything to do with their game. But I've noticed that stuff kind of gone down a lot. And if somebody, you know, there's so many like Facebook disc golf groups. If somebody is rude, you know, you don't even get a chance to, you know, defend yourself. Somebody else is usually kind of at them saying like, knock it off. We're not doing this anymore. You know, so I have noticed that at least.
Yeah, I think social media like has a huge level of importance, and that's how a lot of people are getting just information about the sport. So like anything we can do, I mean, that hashtag and just, you know, making it known, like I said earlier, women's sports in general have less viewership and less compensation. Like, this isn't just a fight that we're facing. And I kind of like that the respect her game is almost like ambiguous. Like, it's not just respect women in disc golf. But it's super important to just, you know, try to get people to just like elevate the level of respect given to like not only professional women, but all women, making sure that they feel comfortable on the course. Again, it can be really intimidating to go out and it's all men. And then, yeah, on the professional side, like in a lot of sports, people don't like watching women play because men can throw farther and hit harder and do things that we can't do. But it doesn't make the things that we can do any less impressive. And so just like raising awareness and promoting on like all aspects that we can, like, no, this really is amazing. Like, look at what they're doing. It's just as cool, and you should watch it, and you should, yeah, love it.
Something I tell a lot of players, I say, hey, if you want to get better and you're watching disc golf, you're probably better off watching FPO anyway, because let's be honest, you're not going to go out and throw like Eagle if you just started. It's probably best. You know,
totally.
Right, Nora. FPO are figuring out so many more lines and angles and manipulating the disc in so many, you know, ways. That obviously depends on the course, but, you know, most of the time these AMs aren't going out there throwing 450-foot shots and tapping in at, you know, 40 feet. Like, you're not really going to learn that.
Absolutely. A lot of the guys I play with, so I'm heading into the back end of 40 into 50 here pretty soon. And I've been playing over 20 years. So all the guys I'm playing with are, you know, late 40s, early 50s. And they enjoy watching FPO because it's relatable. It's how far they can throw. It's, you know, mm-hmm. They can't throw a 550-foot sidearm. You know, they can throw a 280 to 325 sidearm or the scramble. And I love it. I encourage anyone who's new, men or women or juniors, to watch FPO because it's very relatable. Eagle and Simon are amazing, but they're not relatable to a beginner or just an average weekend warrior disc golfer. And I think it's important.
I've also given that advice to many, many, many men who have asked me, Nora, how do I get my girlfriend to play? How do I get my wife to play? Anything like that. And I said, I'm sure you're at home watching MPO, aren't you? And they're like, yeah. And I go, well, she's not going to look at that and go, oh, I can do that. I was like, put on some FPO. We want to see the ability that, like, if we see another girl doing something, we naturally think, oh, I can do that. You know, if that's not true, Pinterest wouldn't exist. So, you know, like, put on some FPO and let her see that it is possible, you know. And she might say, oh, I'm not strong enough. Like, okay, well, look at some of these girls that can launch a disc. I mean, they're not powerhouses, but I think it's
Look at someone like Elaine King, who's, you know, in her 50s and still crushing it and keeping up. And she is not throwing as far as like the top women in the sport, but she can still hang because she's like technical and, you know, can make putts and like floats approaches right to the basket. Like, she's doing unbelievable things.
Absolutely.
And it's
inspiring.
Never seems like you can really retire. You can't really retire. I love it.
So with all of that, and social media being a big part of it and getting the word out there, and obviously the more recognized you are as a disc golfer, the more influential you are on your social media. What's the balance? How do you guys draw that balance between playing your game and bettering it and keeping track of your social media presence and using it as an influence as well? Is there, what kind of balance do you guys, are you finding you have to have?
I personally find it super difficult. Like, I just don't really like find the time to make it a priority. And I also don't want my Instagram and my Facebook to just be like ads, like, hey, buy my disc. But also, that's like a great outlet to let people know, like, hey, I have this stuff you can buy. It's pretty neat. Sort of like to balance that. And like, you know, I like to go hiking sometimes. I post a picture of that, which nobody's interested in, but like I am. So I'm going to post it. But yeah, I definitely don't make enough money as a disc golfer to like only be disc golfing. Like, I have to have all these side hustles. And honestly, social media can feel like work, and that doesn't feel like the point. So I don't have a great answer. I struggle with it.
Yeah, it's something that I constantly have to think about. But if you want to be a sponsored player, you need to have an active social media presence. So I think if like being sponsored wasn't important to me or something that I enjoy, I don't think I would post about disc golf maybe at all. But I like being on the team and I like the products. So it's something that I make a point to be active in.
How about you, Nora?
Yeah, I'm definitely could do better at it. I mean, I just have so many, like, even right now, like, we played, my partner and I, we run our kind of local group, and we played Thanksgiving doubles, and I haven't even posted anything about that. I keep going, oh, I have to post that. But yeah, my Instagram page used to be 5% disc golf and the rest of it my life, and then I disc golf became more of my life, and now it seems like it's all disc golf. I might share a a picture of something I cooked or something like that. But I definitely, I'm just trying to put out the content where, again, just being that ambassador and having somebody might see this, some girl might see this and go, oh, look at that, I can do that. It's really just being a representation. I care so much more about representing the sport in a positive way than I do what my rating is this month, or like my park district doesn't give a hoot
Yeah.
about how I finished at a tournament last weekend. They want to know, are we putting, are we hosting clinics? Are we advancing the course somehow? So I'm trying to focus more on stuff like that rather than like, look at me, I can throw a sidearm stuff, So it does feel like a job a lot, but and I could probably do better at it, but it's hard to find a balance because really, if I didn't have to do it, I probably wouldn't do it at all.
And I love social media. I love Instagram. I
I love
post a
looking
lot,
at it.
but I'm not always posting disc golf. Probably more so since I've been sponsored as well. Like obviously it's part of what we're supposed to do. But other aspects of my life, like my stories just totally ran on what I cooked all weekend. So I'm not playing disc golf right now. So I'm just trying to share content right now. It's tough, but yeah, it's one of the, I think, one of the harder things to do. And I'm seeing the balance is happening for some of the bigger pros by them getting help with their social media. And I guess this will roll into maybe my next question that I have here for you is, do you think that lack of presence or that I don't want to say lack of effort because there's effort, but it's a hard job to do and balance with everything else we do in life. Do you think it rolls into why women aren't disc golfing, or why do you think not more women aren't moving into disc golf? What do you think is the play there? Is there not enough inspiration for them? Do you think social media is part of that? Do you think it's local level club? What are you guys' thoughts on just why women aren't playing as much as men?
I mean, we've talked about some of them already.
Mm-hmm.
The field sizes, right? Like, or maybe not having your division. Like, I started in advanced women, not knowing there was an intermediate women that I could have maybe started with, but I didn't know. I just like, oh, this is like the amateur women's division. So like, I've experienced some of that as well. Or like, I've got put on a couple wait lists this year for big tournaments. Even with like the first, like my rating is high enough that I should have been able to get into those tournaments. But again, those spots were reserved for men. So there's some things that tournament directors and the tour can do and the clubs can do. Again, what Carrie, I think you said it earlier, where they have spots, more than enough spots for women that if they don't fill up, then you take those and give them to maybe the male divisions that are very popular. And like, it's not a perfect answer, but you can't put women on a wait list or not give them a division to play when there are women to do it if we're all trying to grow the sport. So like not having the divisions, not having maybe the money. Even like 3 years ago or 4 years ago when I started playing, there's like maybe 20 women in most fields. So like you had to be like eighth, I think, to cash. That's you're just starting out as a mid-level pro or low-level pro, and you have to be eighth to cash. Like that's unbelievable. So money and field sizes is a huge one. Money more on the FPO side, but division sizes across the board. And then just again, it's like that public perception of that's very male dominated, and maybe it's intimidating to get up on a tee pad after you see a bunch of men throw really far and you feel like you can't and you're embarrassed or something like that. Anything that we can do to make it more inviting. And I do think social media is helping. Like
Awesome.
Jomez is the woman who crushed Wednesdays, and I think that's so cool to like just see women I've never seen before like throwing six shots, and like there's a little blurb about them. So I do think that that's a positive thing, but there are a lot of different barriers.
Yeah, and I think, women not playing disc golf is different from women not playing tournaments. I think that there's a
True.
lot of women disc golfers that don't play tournaments. Like every time I go out now, it seems like 70% of the group of men have a woman with her, and I'm kind of like, hey, who are you? I'm always sniffing out new people. But like it's shocking to me how many people or how many women I see on the course now. And then as far as tournaments, I think exactly what Erica said, like, yes, in the past, 10 years, we've come leaps and bounds as far as division sizes, but if we want to keep growing, we need to have more spots. Like we are, what, less than 3 months away from Las Vegas Challenge, first DGPT spot, and there's 10 FPO on the wait list. Like, come now. Like we could have equal spots. We could fill the events. And yeah, like if I get on a wait list, it's like, okay, I don't have the luxury of like flying to a tour event or, any tournament really, whether or not there's travel. I can't decide that last minute. I have to arrange childcare. I might have to take time off work. Like I've got more things going on. So being on a wait list is a really big barrier, and we should have more spots since we're here, we want to play. But
Plus, keeping those spots away from us, like we could increase the field size by 10 women. That's, at least what, five more payout spots. So now
yeah,
you're
that's
allowing those
exactly
like
it.
mid-level pros and low-level pros to kind of move up, and it starts to become worth it and feasible to maybe do it more often. Like you can't hold spots back from women. That's the worst thing you could do.
Tournament directors, are you listening? We're here to say it. Listen to these ladies, please.
Plus, adding those, even as simple as adding those women's CTPs to your tournaments or your league play, if you got two girls that are coming out, every week, say, hey, we're gonna have a women's CTP and get some girls out here, and just having any kind of little incentive like that. Also, education is a big part of it too. I mean, not too long ago, we walked up to our course and there was a bunch of high schoolers, probably six boys, two girls, and I immediately say, okay, what do these guys have you throwing? Because I saw them like handing discs, right? And of course, the girl's holding a queen, and I say, okay, first of all, if West Side, all right, but second of all, I guarantee he handed you this because it had a queen on it. You know what I mean? I was like, but this disc is, way too big of an iron speed. So we like kind of just sat there and talked to them about, stability and weight and all these other things. And I think just by putting the right plastic in those girls' hands really improved their fun level out there, because it's discouraging going like, oh, here, you want to play with us? Here, take this Defender, take this, Ati. They're not going to have any fun,
I
being.
probably drive my husband nuts because I'm that person that's always eyeballing, same thing as Madison. Like, oh, who's that? I've never seen her here before. And I'll watch her throw like her boyfriend's 178 gram destroyer or something, and it goes like straight in the air and 3 feet in front of her. And I'm grabbing a diamond or a jade out of my bag and running two fairways over to say, hey, I don't know what your boyfriend has you throwing, but here, throw this. And they're like, really? And I've given away more discs on the course than I've ever kept over the years. Or I'll put a putter in their hand, something really simple, and say, just throw this. And you just see them light right up because all of a sudden their disc's going further. And you've
I've
got
gotten that
someone
look
coming
before too.
back.
It's like, did you just give another disc away?
Totally.
Then you look at them like,
So,
well, what do you, of course I did. What was I supposed to do?
totally. So, and I just to go back to the tournaments, like, Being a tournament director myself, and I always try to make sure that the pros get paid well, the FPOs get paid well, but I really try to make sure my amateurs have a good time as well. And Nora, this is something maybe you could talk to a little more. Like, I really think that TDs, B tiers and up, need to start up in their game about that environment, that experience for the AMs, because you only want to win so many pieces of plastic or buy so many shirts or stools or whatever the swag is that you're going to go buy at the tournament store with your winnings. But the experience itself, like, I'm big on that. I want people walking away saying, "Hey, I'm coming back to that tournament next year." Is what do you think about that, Nora? Like, for TDs to pay attention to the amateur the women.
I think having a level of humility is incredibly beneficial. If you, I think what Nate Heindel did for Ledgestone this past year, it started off a little rocky for us ladies because, we had so many women on a wait list and everyone was getting kind of irritated, but they arranged it all. We got in. And then after the tournament, he sent a survey, and that was the first, I think, survey I've gotten from any
Nice.
major that I've ever played or anything like that. And I think that was really humble and awesome to do. So, okay, you came out, what can we improve on? And one of our big complaints as FA1 was the course selection. I mean, it really felt like we got the pitch putt courses. And we're spending a lot of money, just like everybody else, to come out and play these A tiers. And we want to have a pro level experience. Not saying that we want to necessarily play the same tournament, same courses as the pros, but you kind of feel like you get the bottom of the barrel a little bit as an AM sometimes. Just reminding them it's like, hey, we're paying, our money's just as green as anybody else's. And the first thing they did was announce that after those surveys came out, that they're going to improve the course layout for the FA1 ladies, because a lot of us FA1 ladies are looking to move up. We want to be challenged. We don't want to be blindsided by playing these pitch putt courses and then step up and then go, oh my gosh, I just dove into the deep end. So,
And
I think having
I've
that
been
level of
guilty of
humility,
that.
having these TDs ask, oh, how can we improve here, instead of just going, oh, we know girls like pink discs. It's like, just
And I've
ask,
been guilty of
having
it as a TD myself, like looking at all the divisions that fill up, and more so for men than women, but being like, well, if they don't want to play this course, they'll move up to intermediate or they'll move up to advanced. And I've been guilty of that as a TD and really trying not to think like that anymore. And yeah, if that, treat your amateur, your women especially, because they're going to come back and they're the ones that are eventually going to go to advanced and to pro. And the feedback that I just got from you was awesome. I love the fact that they sent out a survey, and I think more TDs should do that. Eat,
I mean, we all are out here to have fun. Like, that's what we're here
Yeah.
to have fun. And easy doesn't always mean fun.
And TDs should be willing to grow with the sport as well, right? It's not as easy as, running a C tier when you run an A tier. And you should be flexible and willing to pivot and be willing to eat some crow and change your thought process on making it better. So, overall, I'm looking at the questions that I was going to ask you guys, and I've asked everything except, have you personally got some of your female friends to play? Like, what have you done to get them out playing? And have they moved from being recreational to being excited about the sport and wanting to play tournaments?
Taking new people is my favorite thing, and taking new women is also my favorite thing. So I always try, if anyone even shows like a spark of interest, and a lot of the people that I've taken have like never played before, and they're just like, oh wow, you like do this a lot. It sounds neat. I like nature. Like, let's go try it. And then, like you said, Carrie, making sure like that I usually give away like two discs to whoever, like whatever new player, often male or female, but like especially females. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna get them like a disc that they can try to throw straight, and like nothing faster than a fairway driver. But sometimes it's just like a mid-range, like a Tursus and a putter that it's like, okay, this might not go as far as you want it, but if you just like throw it nice and smooth and you can get it to go straight, that's like the most impressive skill in this sport, and it's going to be so satisfying, and you're going to be able to control it, and like that's such a cool feeling, and you can just like see the light in their eyes just gleaming. I always tell people, like, the first throw to the last throw, you're going to throw at least twice as far, if not three times as far. Like, I guarantee you. So just like making sure to take a little bit of time and give them tips, but not overwhelm them, I think is really important. But like, I could be better, like you saying you just run across fairways to give people new discs. Like, I love giving away plastic, but like, you just, I'm thinking like, man, I gotta get some like diamonds. I gotta get some discs to just like hand out to women. Like, here you go, try this. This is fun. You know, get some hatchets.
Get some skills, Erica.
I love that. I love what you're doing. And I've done it on a small scale, but like, I, you know, we could all do more, all of us.
I have a slight advantage being a school teacher. So we actually have a course being built in the town I work at. It's very small, even smaller than mine, in the spring. So I fully intend to pull those kids out and play some with them. But something that really helped us on the local level was showing up. You know, obviously, you can do all, we can do all these things on the course, but just getting them to the course. You know, we did like, you know, we did a little downtown city market thing, a lot of, you know, kind of like a farmer's market, if you will, but it was like a city market. And we went down and set up our tent with a bunch of discs, and we put a basket out, and we did a free raffle. We said, hey, come up and putt from 10 feet. If you get an automatic raffle ticket for the, you know, three pack or the beginner player pack. If you make it, you get an extra one, you know, and you can come and do this as many times as you want. So people were coming over and never even held a disc in their hand, and they were just like having so much fun. And then, you know, they come over to the booth to sign the thing saying, if you win, you know, here's your info. But while they're there, you know, we're talking about molds, and it's so hard not to be overwhelming. You're like, oh, let me explain stability to someone who's never, you just held a disc for the first time. But just having that, you know, people going, oh, what's going on over there? Those people look like they're having fun. Also, like many of us, I grew up playing so many sports, and I've had this conversation a few times. It's like, you know how we grew up playing sports, and then we played in high school, and then maybe you played in college, or you played a club team in college, and then you come, you know, you're full grown adult. I'm 38, and my options outside of disc golf is like beer league co-ed softball, which I love softball, but I am way too aggressive, and I end up yelling at guys for swinging on 3-1 counts, you know, like 3-0 counts. Like, what are you doing? But you know, telling those girls that I grew up playing sports with, like, hey, you're going to have a natural knack at this. Like, you should really come out and try it. And you're probably going to be better than me really, really soon. Just even saying stuff like that, they're like, all right, well, I'll give it a shot. So just even just having those conversations, like, could really help.
So I, just as I'm sitting here listening to you talk, and our club does lots of clinics. We actually have an events facilitator on our board that, towards the end of the school year, our school year ends at the end of June here, and usually through the month of June, we're doing two or three clinics a week for schools, and they're bringing the kids down to our small course that we have, and it's amazing how many kids we get. And I think with disc golf, getting families involved too is important. But going back to women with clinics, Nora, you said, you know, a tournament in a box for women. What about a clinic in a box to teach women? Like, it's very different, I think, connecting with women and getting them out there. I ran a league this year, and I never played in it. What I did was I walked through and I hopped into a different group every week. And if someone asked me to play with them to give them advice on throwing or stance or putting, that's what I did. But I feel like if there was just something that was backed by, well, it could be you guys. And it's a, you know, download it here. Here's how you do it. Attract the women. Here's what you need to do. Here's the discs. And then maybe you move into the tournament in a box for women. But would you guys, was that something you guys would be willing to do, is like a YouTube of clinic, putting, driving, approaching? Like, how can we get women feeling more comfortable? Like, Nora, you'd be a great example. You're an amateur. The other two girls are playing on the tour. What can we do? What can we do to get more disc golf in front of more women and getting them coming out and playing?
I think that's a great idea. Yeah. Clinics were life-changing for me when I first started playing. Chick Flick was my first tournament, and they have clinics led by men and women. And like, I remember the moment that disc golf clicked in a clinic, and I was like, okay, Like, this is life changing. So I think they're really, really important. I would love to see, you know, more, like maybe the tour could subsidize clinics at every stop, like women's clinics, you know, because like Erica was saying, it is kind of about the payouts too, just having more accessibility, or like having some of the companies be like, yeah, we really care, like host a clinic, we'll send free 20 discs for the participants or something like that, you know?
Yeah, I just heard, I can't remember what podcast I was talking on, and they said lots of times, you know, your tour ends, the tournament ends on Sunday, and you got to be in the next city by Wednesday. A lot of pros don't want to stick around and on the Monday and possibly use a travel day to do a clinic. But arriving early, like I know for the pros, it's difficult, right? You want to get in and you want to play and you want to practice. But if it was to subsidize your income, like, you know, if you're, I don't know. I think spectators coming out and amateurs coming out would want to learn from anybody. It doesn't have to be the top three touring people, you know. I think it'd be great to have clinics at every stop if it was feasible.
I think it would be cool, like, kind of, I think what you're alluding to is almost if it was like built into like maybe, you know, any of the like West Side or Trilogy sponsored tournaments, like even the huge yeah. ones that I play, like maybe it's like, oh, let's get our players and we'll do the small clinic, but it's organized like from the you know, the higher standpoint, because pros who do clinics generally are putting them on themselves and contacting people on like a one-on-one basis and figuring that out. Like, that's not the case all the time, obviously, but it would be cool if it's like, hey, we, you know, West Side, we're putting on, you know, this tournament, and during one of these practice days, or whatever, you know, after a tournament round, if you play in the morning or something, like, we'd love to have you for this clinic. Like, I would be much more inclined to say yes than like make that happen by myself. And I could definitely like stand to run more clinics. And the hard part, like, women's only clinics do sound really cool, and women's only tournaments are like one of my favorite things. But also, you don't like want to totally exclude, like, maybe there's like male amateurs that love watching, you know, or FPO that want to come to my clinic. So like, I'd be hesitant to be like, no, it's just women only. So like, it's kind of, you got to find that balance, you know?
For sure. You'd have to advertise like women specific.
Yeah. From a local level too, again, like, we wouldn't have been able to do anything here. I mean, I moved back here from Chicago in 2018. We have two courses built, another one being built and one being expanded next spring. And we wouldn't be able to do any of this without building a good relationship with our park district. So, you know, the thing is, like, we can blast, you know, clinics and all that stuff on our social media, but it's only going to be disc golfers that are seeing that. Whereas if I have the park district post or share that we're, excuse me, share that we're having a clinic, all those people who maybe don't disc golf see that post now. You know, it doesn't have to be your local park district. Could be your YMCA, if there's a Boys and Girls Club or any kind of after school club, like, reach out to those groups. And I guarantee you that those groups are going, wait, you have something for us kids, for the kids to do? Oh, okay, let's do that. You know, so we don't have to do this all by ourselves. And I'm a huge advocate of saying the worst I can say is no, you know, but you got to ask.
Absolutely. We have a great relationship with our city here in Kamloops as well. They have their activity guides that they run, and we've done women's only clinics. We've done seniors clinics. We just did that last year through COVID. And you sign up through the city, you pay through the city, and then our club volunteers do criminal record checks, and then they facilitate the clinics for the city. And it is a great way to get in and get the sport recognized, because it gets into the hands of every person. Every resident in the city basically can see that this is being offered. And it's a great segue into building a relationship with your parks and rec community as well.
Yeah, it's a super good point. The Missoula Parks and Rec community is amazing. And two of the courses are on like Forest Service land. And so, yeah, just to see, that's probably the best way to grow disc golf for women that aren't already like involved or have like someone they know who plays, because that's such a wider pool of people that are like, oh, I've seen those weird trash can things in that park. I don't know what those are for, you know, and they see a flyer at their local park. So that's a super good point. and definitely something that anyone can do if they're looking to, grow the sport in their area.
Another thing I'm really trying to do is get just one basket put at every school property. That one basket, donate a few discs, whatnot. That one basket could potentially lead to multiple new players, not just women, but just seeing it, like you said, so many people go, "Oh, that's what those things are down at the park." It's just again that education, that knowledge in there. Just chime in real quick though about the kind of the touring pros. I know, we're not a big community, but we're new to disc golf, and I know it doesn't matter who it was. If somebody said, reached out to our club and said, "Hey, can we come through and do a clinic or, host the tournament, whatever," we would absolutely 100% do that. And we had Jay Ray and Chris Zagone come through this past summer, and we hosted a tournament together. And I remember at one point I said, "I'm sorry, guys, there's just not a, like a whole lot of people here." And they go, "Are you kidding? This is great! Like, so many of the bigger communities have disc golf stores, and they have people who know exactly what they're throwing. Like, these new people, they don't know. Like, we're the one source for them to buy discs. Like, this is great for us." So I think that's something that a lot of pros could keep in mind too. Like, you don't always have to stop at the big cities. You don't have to stop in, the bigger disc golf areas. Like, those small areas can be just as lucrative, if not possibly better, because there's a lot more newer amateur player, more impressionable people.
Absolutely. Any other thoughts or ideas or discussion you ladies want to have around women in disc golf and what we could do better or what we are doing well? And any shout outs, like I said, TDs, I hope you're listening because there's been a lot of great ideas here and we can all learn a lot, all of us, right? From the seasoned 40-year TD down to the person throwing their first C tier. There's a lot to learn here about the inclusiveness of women and the need to continue to include women. It's just not, COVID was huge and the sport exploded. And I think we saw a lot of women come out for that, but we can't stop now. I think we have to grab that and go with it and continue to grow. I know our club in 2019 was 72 people, I think, and we just topped out at, I want to say 218 this year.
Wow.
So, and yeah, and
Congratulations.
COVID fully. Full on COVID, and I want to say to that 218, I want to say at least like 55 to 60 of them are women. So, it's exciting. And I ran a women's league for the first time this year, like I was saying, and I had upwards of 17 women some nights and as little as 10 on other nights, but it's the most I've ever had in the 20 years I've been here trying to run leagues. So I think we've got this momentum that's built, and I think we could only go up from here. We can't let it go. So, kind of my closing thought on that.
I'd love to talk about bathrooms one more time.
Yes.
Well, because I really do think that it's really important when you're out like on tour playing a 4 or 5 hour round, like you can go, even if there's bathrooms every 9 holes, that's 2.5 hours sometimes. Like that's a long time. And everything from like the smallest unsanctioned tournament all the way up to the pro tour events, like we absolutely need bathrooms. Logistically, like as a TD, I would like to see those be allowed as a pass-through cost for tournaments. So maybe we could take that from the player fees, something like that. I would also like to see the PGA's insurance policy cover the porta potties. Because several times, I mean, not only is it a couple hundred dollars to rent the porta potty for a weekend, but if somebody vandalizes it overnight for a 2 day tournament, like that's my credit card and that's my, that burden is solely on the tournament director. But I think it's something that, the PDGA could shoulder. We already have event insurance, and having that being written in, I think more people would be likely to rent porta potties.
And in those porta potties, dedicated feminine sanitary trash cans that people aren't throwing their regular trash in.
Yes.
Super important, often not incorporated,
Absolutely.
much appreciated.
Again, that's those porta potties are something that you could ask your I'm not saying you guys, I'm saying everybody, all TDs out there. You could ask your park district to do. We have two porta potties at our course just because we asked, and they were like, "Oh, well, there's a lot more people here. I see you guys are bringing a lot more people here. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, let's do that." And then it's on them.
Amazing. That's great.
I mean, like I said, we're saying
Yeah.
is no.
I think it was Sarah Hokum that put together a map, And I don't know if she used UDisc or what she used, but it was basically a map of all the courses within like a 3-hour drive of her to go, she could go to tournaments, and it was packed. And then she tagged all the courses that had toilets for like out actual bathrooms. And it went down to like a third of the courses had bathrooms. It was crazy. And she's like, well, I guess I've decided where I can go and play disc golf. And that was a while ago. And that was the first time it actually really made a statement for me, was like, wow, okay, like this is a thing that's
a weirdly prevalent problem.
And yeah. One bathroom is not enough. Like, we need one every 9 holes at least.
And being taken care of, being cleaned. Like, we're girls. We have to hover. We don't get to stand over top of this.
Yeah, and I can tell you from experience, those she-weeds are not great.
Sorry?
I can tell you from experience, the she-weeds, if you know what the she-weeds are, the little funnels, not great. Used them once in a tournament, was more paranoid about someone seeing me as I was standing up rather than the usual squat, but...
Even for men, it's like not a great look for our sport. Like, what if you have someone going for a walk in the park or a hike and they just like see a disc golfer, you know, dude or woman, you just like going in the woods, like not a great look for us, you know? And like trash cans too, like if we're just like littering because there aren't trash cans, I mean, you shouldn't litter anyway, but you know what I'm saying? Like, if there are provided trash cans, people will use them. So like, we don't want to be this dirtbag sport that litters and just like goes in the woods all the time.
It's optics. It's about those people that are walking in the park that are wondering what the heck these chain things are, and then they look over and they're like, oh, and there's someone going to the bathroom right there, and you know, and then they're picking up garbage at the tee pad, and those are the people that don't know what the sport is that automatically don't want to give their time to it, right? So
trash,
you're right,
is a
it's
big,
about optics
big
for
one
sure
for me. If I see anybody up the disc off and toss anything, I'm like, I love everybody, but I'm not your dead me. Like, I will constantly, you know, constantly pick stuff up off the course, and most of the time there's one trash can on the entire course, you know. So that definitely,
and, you know,
bathrooms and trash cans, please.
One of our courses is in passive park space that's frequented by bears, and the city has one really awesome garbage can, but we don't have garbage cans on the course just because of the wildlife that can be brought in. And I'm one of those people that I'll just pull out my grocery bag, my, you know, Safeway bag or whatever I have, and I'll run over and I'll say, hey, it looks like you dropped some garbage. Do you need a bag? Mm-hmm. Like, and I'll be really clear with them. I'll just say, if you really love this sport and love this park, if you don't want to see this disappear, you'll do your part, because the city will walk in and just rip it all out. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, if there's a woman in the group, I'll target her and talk to her, because I can appeal to her a little more than I can the 5 guys. And it's another great way to strike up conversation with a woman who's out there too, who might just be like walking around, not really knowing what she's doing. So being an ambassador and having optics is huge. And bathrooms is a big one. That's, listen up, TDs. Are you hearing us?
But you also have to give them a safe way to do it.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's also discouraging behavior of like drawing dischargers on brand new painted picnic tables that the park district just came out and repainted. You know,
right? That joke's like funny, maybe one time, maybe. And then after that, like, stop drawing.
Yeah. I got into it with a younger guy about that. And he says, you don't know anything about disc golf culture. And I was just, oh my Lord, help me.
And I think we'll fight that for a long time. And I think that's where the pro tour has kind of maybe separated and given us more of a professional look. But every disc golf course, I think, has those, you don't know disc golf culture. Mm-hmm. I put that in air quotes. But, you know, and like I said, being around the sport over 20 years, I'm familiar with that culture for sure. And every bench in the park has a disc golf charger on it. And, you know, or, you know, picking up beer cans or whatever it is. And I think, again, just what we're doing is huge, getting the relationships with the parks department. And just helping our clubs be proud of who they are, and you know, emulating what, like, you know, that behavior that we want to attract those people to come and play in our cities. So, you know, it's tough when you think you want to have the pros come out to your city and you want to throw a great A tier, you're gonna have tons of out of cash, we're gonna draw them all in, but all the social media from your club's members is of disc golf chargers on benches and garbage on your course and, you know, no bathrooms. And you're like, hey, it's a package. You got to put it together to draw those people in. And I think it's something we're always going to have to work at. So is there anything else? I love to go back to bathrooms, but is there something you're trying to say to TDs or to clubs or to anybody out there, something positive they can do that's gonna attract and maintain and keep the women here and keep growing? Any more thoughts?
Call the numbers on the discs. Especially in new communities, it's not like finders keepers. I have to tell a lot of people that. And they just don't know. So
I think we hit on a lot of great points, as far as attracting women with maybe more appropriate discs and the women's only leagues. Nora, I loved your idea with throw in a women's CTP if it's especially if it's a league where there's 50 men and two women, give them a little something that makes it cool that they're there, just anything you can do to make it a positive, inclusive experience. Which we're doing it as a whole. It's getting better. The growth is there. But Carrie, like you said, we cannot stop this momentum. We have to keep growing and tournament directors being open to the feedback, and knowing we're not just trying to slam on you. Thank you for having those tournaments. Tournament directors work so hard, but we can always improve. And especially on the women's side, because again, that disparity of men versus women is too big not to hear our feedback and to just keep putting on wait lists because, well, hey, there are twice as many men on the wait list than women. We're not at that point to have that conversation yet. We have to do everything we can as a whole to get more women playing. We can't just be creating barriers because that's the way it's always done, or whatever the reason
Absolutely.
is. You have to be flexible and adaptable and just
Absolutely.
open to changing.
I agree. You women are amazing. Thank you so much for going along and answering all these questions and being willing to have this conversation and talk openly about what's needed for the sport for women. And it's been a pleasure. It's nice to be able to talk to all of you finally. And I follow you all on social media, so you're doing a good job. And maybe one day we'll meet in person.
Yes, Madison, I'm trying to make it up there this year.
Oh, come. Come hang
I'm
out.
trying to make it up there. It's my top of my list as to disc golf destinations this year.
I'm tournament director for an A tier May 27th to 29th here in Kamloops.
Noting
Where
that.
is that?
So Kamloops is about 3.5 hours east of Vancouver and about 3.5 hours north of the Washington border, where Soyuz and OMAC, I think it's OMAC, are. So we're semi-arid desert up here. It's beautiful. And we got some nice courses. And I'm working hard. My whole team is. I'm not working that hard right now. My fundraising director is. And watch for January and February because this may be the tournament you want to come to where the cash will be.
Fun.
Cool.
So thank you, ladies, again. And Jay, thank you so much for inviting me. I've had so much fun. And again, best sport ever. Thank you so
Thanks
much.
for hosting, Jay and Carrie. This was really, really cool. Thanks a lot.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. This is the West Side Discussion Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to share it with a friend. Again, I want to thank Carrie, Erica, Madison, and Nora for coming on. Thank you to the sponsors, Mando Discware and Birdie Fuel Coffee. Use code WSD10 to save 10%. The theme song is What Would You Be Like by Akira the Don. We'll continue the discussion next time.